You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
There's so many shitty things going on in the world right now that you think the shitty people of the world would look at the news and realize that they don't have to go to any extra effort at this moment to make this shitty world any fucking shittier. And they could take their shitty feet off the fucking shitty gas. But no, there's a new study that came out last week in the Columbia Journal of Gender and Law by Alexander Brodsky that doesn't document a new shitty thing, but new dimensions of an old shitty thing. They're calling it stealthing now. They used to call it taking the condom off during sex without telling the person that you're fucking. Now it has a name, and not just a name, of course, but online communities where shitty people who are engaged in this deeply shitty practice can find each other and then normalize that practice. They have created a community where this is okay, where men gather to talk about how taking the condom off during sex without their partner's consent, which instantly transforms what had been a consensual sexual experience into a non-consensual sexual experience, and therefore assault and rape, is their right as men, because they are, as men, supposed to splatter their seed here, there, and everywhere they care to. And so if a woman or a man requires you to put a condom on to have intercourse with them, just put the condom on and then halfway through remove the condom. There are women who are going to rape crisis centers because they don't know where else to turn. Women who have been stealthed. And they have used phrases like rape adjacent to describe the experience, when actually it's pretty much just rapey, what's being done to them. I would encourage people to read up on this a little bit. Google stealthing and the stories about Brodsky's report in the Columbia Journal of Gender and Law will pop right up, including some interviews with Brodsky. It's all really interesting stuff. And people should be aware of what's going on, particularly in these online communities where shitty people gather to normalize being shitty people. I just wanted to share a tip from the bad old days, from the HIV/AIDS crisis era. I came out in 1981. I was getting my ass fucked all through the AIDS crisis years, during the AIDS epidemic. And we had a move that we incorporated into anal sex with condoms that I would like to gift to everyone out there who is a little concerned about this, about someone, quote unquote, attempting to stealth on them, getting stealthened, or I'm not sure how to conjugate this shitty verb, but a gift. I just want to give you this technique. And it was awkward at first when we incorporated this into anal intercourse with new partners, but you got better at it. And then it became second nature, and it became one of those things that your body just did without really thinking about it. And it wasn't a distraction, which was to check that the condom was still there and still whole while you were getting your hole pounded by the person wearing that goddamn condom. That doesn't mean stop the sex and turn on all the lights and get out a flashlight and inspect the dick and inspect the condom and then get back into position and start fucking again. Here's the move. You're getting fucked. It's somebody new. And you're worried that they may remove the condom. For as long as people have been wearing condoms, there have been shitty people out there taking them off. You slip your hand down there and you feel the dick is going to pull out and then go back in. And all you do is every once in a while, your hand glides down in between your legs, down to your hole. That dick is coming out. You can feel the condom. You can feel a condom on a dick. You can feel the bottom of the condom to make sure the condom is still on. And what we were checking for, and what I believe I was checking for with the people that I was having sex with, was to make sure that the condom hadn't broken. Because 1987, a broken condom, particularly if you had an HIV-positive boyfriend, was potentially life-altering, tacking toward life-ending at that time. So we took this business of condom checks really seriously. And it sounds like something you can't do without kind of ruining the sex. People talk about condoms like having to pause to put the condom on, throws you out of the moment. And then they imagine having to pause to check that the condom is still on or whole. That would really throw you out of the moment. And it's not true. If you can incorporate this move, if you do it often enough, it indeed becomes second nature and you don't really have to think about it. Your hand drifts down, you feel the condom still there, you allow them to keep going. If your hand drifts down and there is no condom there, you jump. You get off that person, or you get that person off you. Hopefully, it was innocent. Sometimes condoms do slip off. That can happen. Sometimes condoms break. And one of the things we have to do when we have sex with strangers, not just strangers, sometimes people that you're in a relationship with will pull this move too, but someone you don't know well, someone you may never see again, may not feel that they have to treat you like someone who matters. So to protect ourselves in those circumstances, we spot checked all through it, spot checked all through it to make sure that that did not happen, that a condom didn't break, that a condom didn't slip off, or that a shitty asshole pulling a shitty move didn't pull it off. So I'm not saying that it is the responsibility of the person getting fucked to keep the condom on. It is not the responsibility, shouldn't be the responsibility of the person getting fucked to police the person doing the fucking. It just might be in your own best interests as the person being fucked to do a little policing. Policing you shouldn't have to do. But the kind of policing that this study indicates and these online communities of assholes clearly indicate that more of us should, unfortunately, take on ourselves. In happier news, Rachel Bloom, the creator and star of CW's terrific musical comedy sitcom Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, comes on the show to answer some of your questions and give a little sex advice with me later. But first up, your cue, my A, then Rachel Bloom. I'm so excited she's here. I am such a fan of Rachel's and her show, and we got her on the podcast. This episode is brought to you by CISO, the subscription streaming service that delivers the very best comedy. Sign up for 1 month free by going to CISO.com and entering the promo code SAVAGE.
This episode is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace is the easiest way to create a beautiful website, blog, or online store for you and your ideas. Squarespace features an elegant interface, beautiful templates, and incredible 24/7 customer support. Try Squarespace at squarespace.com and enter offer code SAVAGE at checkout to get 10% off. That's squarespace.com, offer code SAVAGE.
We want to thank Audible for their support of the Savage Lovecast. For a free 30-day trial, go to audible.com/savage.
Hey, Dan, I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller. I love your show so much. Anyway, my question has to do with privacy. Basically, I'm 24 and my brother is 34. The last time he dated anyone, or at least anyone he told me and our mom about, was in college about 13 years ago for him, when he dated a girl for 2 years, or a year or 2 years. To say the least, my mother and I are worried about him. We're worried partly because we want him to live a full life filled with love, and we think a romantic partner can play a role in that. But mainly we're worried because he refuses to talk about his romantic or personal life with us at all. We're a pretty close family relationship, but whenever the subject of partners comes up, my brother gets extremely uncomfortable, clams up, and sometimes physically leaves the room. He has said he wants kids, but at this point, this doesn't seem likely. My mother and I would be accepting if he's gay, bi, asexual, or whatever, but we just feel like as a 34-year-old man, he should be able to talk about his personal life, even if vaguely, with us, friends, a counselor, honestly, whoever. In his void of communication, we're worried something is wrong. My mother tried to bring this up like a billion times, but he always deflects and says he has a right to privacy. So my question is, should our mom and I respect my brother's privacy and let him live the solitary life he chooses, or should we take more action?
I don't know what action or more action than the actions you've already taken you could possibly take in this circumstance. You can't stage a shotgun wedding where you force your brother to marry some random woman who would like to marry him or who has a shotgun pointed at her as well. You got to butt the fuck out. You got to respect his right to privacy. He does not owe you or your mother or anyone an explanation for why he isn't dating or choosing to be single, despite the fact that he might want kids. He doesn't say he'd like to have a partner. And unless he's whining to you guys and constantly complaining and bemoaning his fate at being a single man at his age, which would open him up to, you know, being drawn out on the subject and having a conversation with you guys about the subject. And then because he's constantly complaining to you about the subject, he would owe you some explanation and unpacking that subject with you, since you guys have to sit there and listen to him whine and complain. If he's not doing that, he doesn't owe you an explanation. You're not allowed to draw him out. He has said, respect my right to privacy. And now it is your job to back the fuck off, you and mom. You don't have to be miserable on his behalf. And you know what? You don't have to project misery onto his date. It's entirely possible that he is not miserable. Lots of people are living alone. Lots of people are choosing not to get married. And sometimes these people feel obligated with family and friends to act as if they are unhappy about this, because people who are contentedly single can be made to feel somehow damaged or broken, because everybody's supposed to want a partner and everyone's supposed to want love in their life. And not everybody does want a partner or does want love in their life, but they don't want their friends and family to think they're the kind of sicko, broken person who wouldn't want love or a partner in their life. So they pretend that they might like that, or they let their parents and their siblings think that there's something missing from their life because they don't have that. But at a certain point, and I think 34 is well past that point, you have to let your brother make his own choices. And you have to butt the fuck out. He's asked you to butt the fuck out. That's what respect my privacy means. It means butt the fuck out. So it is now your job, and I'm putting you under orders to butt the fuck out. Respect his right to privacy and stop trying, as his sister, to micromanage his personal life, and stop projecting your wants and desires onto him. His wants and desires or fears may be very different than yours. But the fuck out.
Hi, Dan. My friend and I are both 22-year-old straight females living in the Southwest. We volunteer together at an after-school program for teens and are close with many of the kids there because we are relatively close in age and have some similar interests. We follow many of the students on social media, and 2 days ago, one of the boys started asking my friend and I sexual questions over Snapchat. If he were asking questions about the mechanics of sex and safety and that kind of thing, we would have been happy to answer, but he was asking us about us and our masturbation techniques. For example, do you have a vibrator? How do you use it? Does it feel good? And was essentially using our comments to get off. At first, we didn't respond at all, but after several of these questions, we told him to stop because it's inappropriate, and we could both get in a lot of trouble because he's only 15. We tried to tell him to watch porn, but he said he doesn't get off from it, but he's really frustrated because he is horny all the time. We care about him and want to help, but we have no idea how.
Boundaries. That's how you help this kid. That's how you demonstrate to him that you, unlike some other people perhaps in his life, actually care about him, by having clear and appropriate boundaries and establishing those boundaries. And you almost did when you said, this isn't appropriate, this conversation, we're not going to have this conversation with you, you shouldn't be asking these kinds of questions. And then he pivoted to, I need this to get off, I'm 15, and porn doesn't do it for me. And now you feel obligated somehow to help him get off because porn doesn't work for him, that he has created, by making this statement, some obligation on your part to come through for him with some tips on getting off for the 15-year-old boy. This is a 15-year-old boy who needs help getting off. Some tips to help him get off because pornography doesn't work for him and you don't want to have a conversation with him about vibrators and how you masturbate and what your technique looks like. No, you don't owe him anything. He can get out there in the big wide world and figure out other forms of mental stimulation that will work for him. And you are not required to come through with those on his behalf. In fact, it will not serve him well. You will not be helping him. You will not be demonstrating to him that you care about him by even attempting to provide him with other forms or suggestions about other ways he might fantasize or be aroused or turned on in order to help him blow his 15-year-old loads, because that will be creating for him not clearly defined boundaries and ideas about what is and isn't appropriate, but porous and messy boundaries. And it will be putting in his head that when someone says, no, this isn't appropriate, that he doesn't need to back the fuck off and go the fuck away and stop, that he needs to come back at that person with a request or a question. He needs to make another attempt at scaling those walls. And that's not good. No. Shut this fucking down. And he can whine, and then you shut that fucking down until it stops and he gets out there in the big wide world and finds other things to jack off about besides the two of you. Audible has an unmatched selection of audiobooks, original shows, news, comedy, and more. Audiobooks are great to listen to when you're driving, on the subway or bus, doing chores around the house, or at the gym. For our listeners, Audible is offering a free 30-day trial. Just go to audible.com/savage and browse their unmatched selection of audio programs. Download a title free and start listening. It's that easy. One or actually more audiobooks you might want to consider. Well, Audible has a giant erotica section. I'm always urging people who are trying to figure out what turns them on, what their kinks might be, to read or, in this case, listen to erotica. You could be listening to Servicing the Target by Cherise Sinclair, or The Billionaire's Obsession by Simon from Simon's Complete Series, The Deep End by Kirsten Ashley, or Submitting to Lord Rockwell, or Master May I by Shauna Hunter. There are tons, hundreds of erotica titles available at Audible if you want to start exploring to see what might click for you. And you want to do it for free, you get that 30-day free trial by going to audible.com/savage. Again, that's audible.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I'm in my early 30s, and I live in Jerusalem in Israel. And Jerusalem definitely, definitely has a gay scene, for sure. But it's also full of Orthodox religious men, and they do not act like the trendy hip guys that are in Tel Aviv who are holding hands in the street, and they're even living with their husbands and adopting kids. The Orthodox men here, they don't know how to flirt, or they don't know how to meet men the way that we did in America, where you meet a guy doing some volunteer work or at a bar or at a sports club or at work or going to the gym. And what's happening to me, and I don't know what to do, what's happening is I'll be walking down the street and I'll see an Orthodox guy, like he'll see me and he'll keep looking at me. And then he continues to sort of covertly follow me and, you know, sort of like stalking, but not in a creepy way. I mean, at least I don't think it's creepy. I think it's fun and exciting. And the other day I was on my cell phone, just hanging out outside of a coffee shop, and some guy just took one look at me and decided he liked what he saw. And he just sort of hung around. And I guess he was hoping that I would get off my cell phone and talk to him. And in both of these instances, it just reminds me of how the U.S. was in the 90s. You know, you couldn't meet guys through means like at the gym or volunteering at the Gay and Lesbian Center. You met them in parks and whatnot. And I don't know what to do each time, because each time I kind of would love to meet them, sure. But, I mean, am I just supposed to turn my ass around and walk up to them and say, hey, I noticed you looking at me. Well, I'm interested in you too. I mean, that's odd. What did you do when you were, like, living in the U.S. and it was in, like, the 90s and guys didn't quite know how to flirt via conventional means? It was all very covert. Like, what's the language that I use? What do I do? I also don't want to scare them off, because I feel like if I come up and I'm a big gay out self, they'll flip out. So what do I do in this situation? I really want to meet them.
First, I think you've confused the 1990s in the United States with the 1950s or 1940s in the United States. You could meet people through non-furtive means even before dating apps came along. People went to bars. There were gay neighborhoods. There were sort of gay restaurants. You walked down the street. You could actually flirt with people. And I did, and I saw others doing it at the gym. This was a thing that happened in the 1990s. It wasn't this furtive secret society of sideways glances, and although there was some of that too, people called it cruising, and now people just cruise their apps. But your impression of gay life way, way, way back in the dark ages of the 1990s in the United States is just completely off. Those of us who were there, those of us who managed to non-furtively find partners back then, can attest to just how off your assessment of that era is. Okay. You can walk up to one of these guys and say hi. I'm not sure why you would want to, because bundled, I think, with the Orthodox lifestyle that they're trying to adhere to is a lot of shame around homosexuality. And as anyone who's ever messed around with a deeply closeted, deeply conflicted, religious person, be they a Mormon, be they an evangelical pastor, be they an ultra-Orthodox Jewish person who hasn't escaped, they're not really good experiences. The guys aren't really very emotionally available. They don't really feel good about what they're doing with you, and so they don't feel good about you, and they will project their anger and shame onto you. There's a lot of resentment that someone in that circumstance has for the person that they're fucking or being fucked by or the dick that they're sucking and the guy who's sucking their dick. They will tell themselves, I wouldn't be doing this gay thing. Why do these gay guys keep sucking my dick? As in the famous Onion headline, why do these gay guys keep sucking my dick? It's so awful. It's not fun to be on the receiving end of that kind of desire mixed with resentment, which is what you're very likely to get from one of these guys. So I would encourage you, rather than cruising and going up to and talking to an Orthodox guy, to find guys who've left Orthodoxism, if Orthodox guys kind of turn your crank, or to run off with guys who aren't mixed up in an archaic religious cult, in my opinion. I would run screaming if I were your shoes. Now, of course, there are some guys out there, there are some gay guys out there who get off on sleeping with the deeply conflicted, closeted, shame-drenched dude, be they the evangelical pastor, the devout Mormon, the Catholic priest, the Orthodox Jew. Some guys like that energy. Some guys even like the contempt and the post-orgasmic regret. They like that moment when the guy comes and the shame just pours over them. I don't know why anyone would like that. I don't like that. I want to be in the room with that. I don't even want to know if that's going on. If you're one of the guys who likes that, then you could go for it. But I promise you, half the guys that you walk up to who cruised you are going to deny that they did it and blow up at you. They looked because they liked what they saw, but you walking up to them and confronting them about it, basically making them own that moment, a lot of guys who are deeply religious and deeply conflicted and gay and closeted, sometimes even to themselves, they may not realize what their eyes are doing, are not going to welcome your attentions. They're going to blow the fuck up and scream and yell at you. Something else you'll be on the receiving end of if you pursue these guys. So I think you shouldn't pursue these guys, and I wouldn't if I were you. Remember when you could stream original comedy content for just $3.99 a month? I don't either. And that's why I love CISO, the exclusive home of Harmon Quest, my brother and me, and the all-new season of Hidden America with Jonah Ray, and my favorite, my personal favorite, Carmen Esposito's Take My Wife, which just got a season 2, and I'm so happy. Thank you, CISO. With CISO, you get unlimited access to CISO original series, next day late night, hilarious stand-up specials, binge-worthy classics, including 42 seasons of Saturday Night Live, the entire Monty Python catalog, the It Crowd, and more. Both seasons of Hidden America with Jonah Ray, check. The debut TV series from the McElroy brothers of My Brother and Me, check. An animated fantasy roleplay game starring Dan Harmon and hilarious and famous comedian guests. CISO has that too. CISO is the new home for all your favorite comedy, Britcoms, stand-up specials, bingeable classics, and more. And it's all on demand and ad-free. Access CISO content from anywhere at any time using iOS, Android, Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, Windows, or Xbox One. And CISO is just $3.99 per month for all the comedy you want, anytime, anywhere, ad-free. Just go to SEESO.com right now to sign up for 1 month free with promo code SAVAGE at checkout. That's CISO.com, spelled SEESO.com, promo code SAVAGE.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 30-year-old man living in the Northeast, and my wife and I decided to open our relationship about a year ago because both of us had very little sexual experience outside of each other, me especially, but a fetish of mine is now threatening to destroy my entire marriage. So my wife insisted when we started that we would seek out separate experiences. She was uncomfortable with the idea of threesomes and foursomes. I didn't want her to change her mind about the whole thing, so I agreed. The open relationship has been life-changing for her. She has really come into her own sexually in the last year, and it also helped her become more social, where she used to be content pretty much staying in every night. She's had lots of success having sex with lots of guys and having a couple of regular fuck buddies. With her most frequent fuck buddy, she tells me pretty much every detail, takes pictures and video of her with him, and I've absolutely loved it. But she still wanted some separation between me and her relationship with this fuck buddy. I've never met him or talked with him. for whatever reason, I got pretty obsessed with it. Although I would say I was pretty 90% involved with how much she shared with me, it still wasn't enough to me. It's possible I got obsessed with it because I was not having much success on my end of the open relationship. This is where I really fucked up. I went on her phone, read her text messages with him, went on her computer, and then the most egregious thing, I put an audio recorder in our bedside table on a day I knew she was going to be fooling around with him via Skype. She found the recorder and subsequently found out all the other violations of her privacy. She's someone who very much values her privacy, and this was crossing a line that I might not be able to come back from. This is where I need your help. I have a history of enjoying voyeurism. I got in trouble with it back in college, and I lost good friends because of it. I tried spying on my wife when she was just my girlfriend, and the relationship almost ended then. In the last 11 years, since I was first caught, I've probably attempted to spy on someone between 10 and 15 times. She is now giving me one last shot to save our marriage. She is mandating that I seek out some sort of treatment once a week. I feel really ashamed that I never truly considered how invasive and disrespectful this fetish is until my wife threatened to leave me. I truly want to change now and treat this. I'm going to therapy, but my wife says it's not enough. We were also attempting to find the right couples counselor. We went to one who was super judgy about our open relationship, so we're still working on that. I've gone to a few Sexaholics Anonymous meetings, but I don't feel like I fit in there. This isn't something I seek out constantly, and I'm nowhere near a chronic masturbator, nor do I watch porn that often, but she still thinks I could do more. Oh, and she also wants to keep the relationship open because besides this, it's been one of the most exciting and positive things in her life lately. So here are my questions. Can you recommend any books or some other material I could read or watch or some other supplemental form of treatment that might help me put this unacceptable fetish behind me? And also, what do you think about the state of our open relationship?
Voyeurism is at once creepy and common. There are a lot of voyeurs out there. Studies put the percentage of the population that is interested in voyeurism or who have experienced or practiced voyeurism anywhere between like 7, 10, 20, even 50%. And there are voyeurs of opportunity. You're walking down a street past an apartment building and some people are fucking that apartment building and you can hear it. You stop and listen. Or you're walking by and they can be seen and you stop and take a look and congratulations, you are committing an act of voyeurism and you are now a voyeur. What you're doing, though, is a little compulsive and a little fucked up. Taping your wife without her knowledge, including taping her boyfriend without his knowledge. In many states, recording people without their consent is a crime, on top of the crime that voyeurism itself can be. Some places, some people have wound up on sex offender registries in some states after they were convicted of voyeurism. People feel violated by that kind of sexual activity. That said, if you're asking for my help in eradicating this kink, what book you can read that will rip this out of your brain, you're shit out of luck. Everybody acknowledges now that kinks can only be dealt with, managed, channeled. They can't be eradicated. You can't reach into someone's erotic imagination and just pull out a couple of wires and cure them of their paraphilia. You have to roll with your paraphilia. There are people out there who want to own people, right? Who are very turned on by master-slave dynamics. You don't get to own people. You only get to pretend to own someone, right? You are a voyeur. You like to spy. That was your word for it. You don't get to do that. You may lose your wife. You may fuck your marriage up irrevocably. You may wind up with your ass divorced for having done that. So you don't get to do that anymore. And you don't get to do that to anybody else because of the risks you run for yourself in doing that. What if you did get busted outside someone's window and arrested and wound up charged with a sex crime and then wound up on a sex offender registry, which is a kind of social and political death in this country? That isn't something that you can allow to happen to yourself or your marriage. You got to stop. The way to stop, though, is not to build a dam behind which this desire builds up until the dam breaks and you act out impulsively on these desires. You have to find a safety release valve. You have to have a floodgate that allows you to indulge in this kink without violating your wife, her boyfriend, strangers, or anyone else. Go to sex clubs. Join a sex club where people have sex in public and you can look to your heart's content. Construct for yourself consensual fantasy scenarios where someone who would someone who's an exhibitionist would like to be seen. There are people out there who are exhibitionists, who like to be looked at, who would welcome your voyeuristic attention. And you can arrange through the blessing that is the internet for kinksters, you can arrange to be outside their house at a certain time to watch them fuck. And they can get the thrill of exhibiting themselves as the exhibitionists they are to a voyeur who is consenting to being so exposed to their bodies and their fucking. You can channel this in healthy and constructive and consensual ways. That's how you get out of this corner into which you painted yourself. That's how you solve this problem. The problem isn't spying, really. It isn't even voyeurism. The problem is consent and the lack of consent and violation of consent. You are free to spy on people who would like to be spied on. You are free to listen to people fucking who would like to be overheard fucking. You are free to watch people fuck who would like to be watched fucking or are fucking in a place and at a time where they don't have a reasonable expectation of privacy, like at a sex club or a swingers club. So good luck to you. Get out there, find a kink positive, open relationship positive counselor, not just an open relationship positive counselor. You already had some trouble there, but you also want a kink positive counselor. You want a counselor who isn't so stupid as to believe that words or drugs or anything else will cure you of your kink. You have to ride your kink, channel your kink into consensual expression. You violated your wife's consent. You should continue to apologize to her for that for a very long time. Now get out there and find people who would like you to see or hear what they're up to and explore this and indulge this and have this in a consensual way.
This episode is brought to you by Squarespace. Whether you need a landing page, a beautiful gallery, a professional blog, or an online store, with Squarespace, it will look great and you can get it done fast. Creating your website with Squarespace is a simple, intuitive process. You can add and arrange your content and features with the click of a mouse. They have award-winning templates, customizable settings, and more, all without a single plugin. It shouldn't be intimidating to make a website, and with Squarespace's 24/7 customer support, anyone can crank one out. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com and enter offer code SAVAGE to get 10% off your first purchase. That's squarespace.com and enter SAVAGE.
Hi, Dan. Longtime listener, first-time caller, 32-year-old bi lady in the Northeast. About 2 years ago, I was in Vegas with my family, my little cousin's birthday, and I met a guy. I met this really cute guy. He's a GGG, very cool, very smart tech consultant, not sort of a dick. He like used to play lacrosse, and he does CrossFit, but he's not like one of those hulky CrossFit is all kind of guys. He's very cool. But we started talking, you know, just like a fling in Vegas, but he happened to be in New York the next week. So I went up to visit him and we had a really nice weekend. It was great. And we started talking, but he went back to California where he's from. And I was going to visit him, but he started dating someone. Life happened. It's fine. Fast forward 2 years later, and he has moved to Australia, broken up with the girl he was seeing, and he starts texting me again. And we're sort of texting and dirty texting, and it's great and it's fun. And he's surprised going to be in town in a month. And my dilemma is this: when I met him 2 years ago, I was training to have a boxing match. And I was in really amazing shape. As you might imagine, I was really cut and just physically fit. And he's, you know, commented, you know, in like to text on my body and stuff. But in the 2 year interim, I'm an attorney. I changed jobs. I had to drive an hour commute for the new job. And the combination of no longer biking to work every day and going to fight training, but driving an hour of work and stopping that training has resulted in me gaining about 10 to 15 pounds. So I don't look the same as he remembers. So I'm wondering, I mean, I'm going to do my best to get in better shape in the months that I have, but I'm wondering when I see him, do I say something about it? Do I just ignore it? I think it's going to be fairly obvious that I don't look exactly the same way as I did. I'm still in good shape. I mean, I still run and work out and stuff, but I obviously shouldn't mention it beforehand, I guess. I mean, that would be awkward. Hey, I gained, you know, 10 pounds. I don't look the same. Don't expect the same thing. Ha ha. I don't see that going well. So I just, should I gloss over it? I don't know.
If you'd gained 30 or 40 or 50 or 150 pounds, you might want to give this guy a heads up so as to spare yourself the pain of rejection or some look in his eye when he takes you in at the airport and sees that you are twice the woman that you used to be. But 10 pounds? You don't have to disclose 10 pounds. And I don't think you have to disclose 150 pounds. I think it would be in your own interest to disclose that to spare yourself a painful rejection that may come your way or may not. But 10 pounds? You were in training then for some boxing competition or whatever it was, and now you're not, and you have 10 extra pounds on your body? No, that's not something you need to send up a flare about. And if that's something that he has a terribly negative reaction to, and I don't think it is, and it certainly shouldn't be, then you tell him to get the fuck out of your apartment and let him know he can find somewhere else to stay while he's visiting.
Hi, Dan. I just found out that basically I got out of a long-term relationship and have been seeing this guy that I met on Tinder for like 2 months. And I understand we're obviously not exclusive, but I just found out that he has a girlfriend and has had one since we started talking. I found out via Instagram. I don't have Instagram. He does. So I guess maybe he thought that I would never find out. And now I just feel like shit, basically. We had a conversation recently. I said, when was your last long-term relationship? He said last year, but it only lasted a few months. The last post from her was from like a week ago. So this is obviously something that's still going on. I don't know. It just makes me feel like I can't trust anybody. I'm pretty bummed out. He just seems like a nice guy. I'm just confused. Like, how can you even tell anymore?
Joining us by phone to help answer this question, Rachel Bloom, co-creator, writer, and Golden Globe-winning star of CW Network's hit musical comedy drama series, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Rachel plays Rebecca, a slightly unhinged lawyer who abandons New York City, which I would never do, and moves to California, which I would never do, to woo Josh, who I would like to woo, her first love from summer camp. Hey, Rachel.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm so good. I'm so excited. This is my favorite podcast.
Oh, thank you for saying that. No, you spend a lot of time talking about your show and yourself when you do media and other people's podcasts, talking about your amazing and talented self and your great show, but not today.
Okay.
Today you're on my show and we're going to talk about my callers and their problems. And I think you're going to be great because your show is all about relationships and sex, and it's smart and it's nuanced about relationships and sex. So I'm sure you can give great sex advice. Really, any idiot can do it. If I've been doing it for a quarter of a century, you can too.
I will try my best.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
All right. So this woman dating a guy from Tinder, they've been talking. Didn't get the impression they've had many face-to-face interactions, or if any at all. He's got a girlfriend. What should she do?
Yeah, that was my question, is how much has she talked face-to-face to this guy? Because, I mean, he sounds like a real asshole. He sounds, you know, not like the most upfront guy. And if someone is really important to you, theoretically, you are going to meet them face to face. And generally when someone's skeevy, I don't know, I like to hope you get a sense of that. So, but if she'd just been talking to him on Tinder, then who knows? But as far as telling his girlfriend, it doesn't sound like the relationship's advanced enough to insert oneself into that. And then also, as you say all the time, you don't know what agreement people have with their significant others. I mean, they could have an agreement that he's allowed to go on Tinder and flirt and it gets him off. So,
and it may be, that may be all he did was get on Tinder and flirt and lie. He also lied, but they didn't actually meet up. They didn't have sex. They haven't gone on dates. He was flirting and lying, but flirting and lying. And should she bust him?
Yeah, no, I just don't think that it just depends how much they've met up, right? Because if they've met up and gone on dates and had sex, then that's a different issue. But if he is just flirting on Tinder, giving him the benefit of the doubt, maybe he has an agreement with his girlfriend that he's allowed, you know, she's like, okay, I'm cool if you go on Tinder and flirt with people, and you're not going to get anywhere flirting with people and saying, I have a current girlfriend. You have to lead people into thinking you're single, which that's like the one shitty thing, even giving him the benefit of the doubt, is wasting people's time if you're not actually single.
Fakes and flakes drive people crazy on all
right
apps.
So I don't know. If it were me, I would just kind of wash my hands of the whole thing and run away.
block him and move on. But what if it were you and you'd been having sex with this guy for 3 months who told you he didn't have a girlfriend that you met on Tinder, and then you found out he did have a girlfriend because you decided to look at his Instagram account for the first time?
Well, first I confront him and be like, what the fuck? And if he doesn't come clean or he keeps lying, then I might tell her. But I think it all depends on what he says when you talk to him.
Yeah, I never knew what to advise people about this. This impulse to, you know, be the righteous one and out the lying cheat is understandable, but it's so mixed with a desire for vengeance that it's hard to feel pure about it, or like you're actually on the moral high ground that you think you're on as you burst into someone else's relationship and potentially upend it.
Yeah, we've been thinking about, because without going into spoilers, we ended my show last season with this kind of vengeance-y kick. And so we've been thinking about the idea of vengeance and revenge a lot in the past couple of days as we've gotten back in the writer's room. And it's always interesting because I am someone who's had quite a lot of revenge fantasies. I'm someone who will kind of keep my mouth shut and then be like, oh, if I'd only said that thing that I wanted to say. And it's a very short-term want. When you actually think about the long-term effects of getting revenge, it begins to get unpleasant. So if you were to tell this guy's girlfriend, you basically are the messenger that causes their breakup, and you're now part of their story.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot. And if it's someone you've been talking to just on Tinder, I don't know if that's something you want to get into.
Does not rise to the level of potential relationship impeachment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Rachel hangs out and takes a couple of more questions with me on the Magnum edition of the Savage Lovecast, which you can subscribe to at www.savagelovecast.com.
Hey, Dan, Nancy, and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. I'm calling today with a business-related question. So I work in housing, and it's a housing complex that caters to a lot of students. And recently, I had an interesting thing arise with one of my residents. They had been emailing me on and off for about 2 months about how they were frustrated with their neighbors because either very late at night or very early in the morning, their neighbors have loud sex, and it's been very disruptive to him and his studies. So I told the resident that I couldn't really proceed without knowing which room it was coming from, so that if he ever found out specifically who was making the noise, I could then have a conversation with those residents about maybe cooling it. So this weekend, he sends me an email with not only the room number that these noises are coming from, but also 2 3-minute clips of audio of his neighbors having sex. So it seems to me I have to have 2 conversations. One is a conversation with the residents who are having sex, saying, hey, all about sex positivity, but your noise is kind of disruptive to your neighbors, because it's probably not just this guy, even if he's the only one complaining, because it was loud. I imagine a lot of people are hearing it too. And I want to do that in a way that is respectful, that is sex positive, that isn't, you know, trying to come down on them for having sex and enjoying sex. But at the same time, they do live in an apartment community. I also need to have a conversation with the guy who recorded them, because that seems a little skeevy that he recorded them having sex and then sent it to my business email. I wasn't totally cool with that. So 2 awkward conversations. And I've already talked to my supervisor. We've worked out an action plan. I think I know what I'm going to say, but I love your show, and I was curious how a sex advice expert would handle both of these awkward conversations. So let's hear it, Dan. What would you do?
People have a right to have sex in their apartments or their rooms or their dorm rooms. And you can, as Gary Coleman, the character, sings in Avenue Q's, you can be as loud as the hell you want. You can be as loud as the hell you want when you're making love, and people kind of have to deal. Neighbors should be neighborly. Neighbors should be considerate. If they're having sex for 2.5 hours and it's 2.5 hours of screaming, that's not very considerate. That's not anything the neighbors should have to put up with. But if they're having sex for an hour or 30 minutes, and they get noisy in the last few, which is far more typical. That's usually what happens. There's a couple of minutes of caterwauling, and then it's over. That's something that a considerate neighbor puts up with. You don't have a right to live in an apartment, but you don't have a right to live in a house. You don't have a right to live on a planet with almost 8 billion other humans and never overhear those other humans fucking. Humans fuck. Humans make noise when they fuck. We are social animals who clump up many of us into cities, and you are going to overhear some of that fucking. I think the person complaining is the unreasonable one. If they believe they have a right to live in that building without ever overhearing anybody else having sex noise, they have some right to live in this shared and communal space without ever having the fact that other people are having sex put into their heads by the sounds of other people having sex. That's unreasonable. If, however, these tapes that he made went on for 2.5 hours of caterwauling or fisting or flogging or whatever the fuck they were doing, and it was noisy for 2.5 hours, that's an asshole fucking move. That's not neighborly. That's not considerate. And they are then the unreasonable fuckers who need to dial it back, or they need to drive off into the countryside and find an abandoned barn to have sex in the middle of the night and not the apartment. You do need to point out to the person who made the tapes that, as I mentioned earlier on today's show, it is in many jurisdictions illegal to tape people without their consent and without their knowledge. That includes this kind of shit, taping people who are having sex and making noises as people do when they have sex without their knowledge. He could have, by creating that tape, committed a crime. And you might want to Google that wherever it is that you live, check the statutes where you are. And if that's the case, warn him. Delete this. You will delete it. And he should never do this again because it is criminal. And out of consideration for his feelings and to avoid prosecution, you're not going to mention the tapes to the folks that you're going to go confront about how noisy they are when they have sex.
Hi, Dan. I was just listening to episode 548 in the car, and I had to pull over when I heard the woman's story about the massage therapist who assaulted her. I'm a licensed massage therapist, and I was just fuming listening to that story. And I wanted to apologize to her, and I wanted to thank you for the advice that you gave her. And I wanted to add something to it, because each state, if this guy indeed is a licensed massage therapist, each state has attached to their licensing bureau an office that fields complaints. Sometimes it's called the Office of Professional Discipline. Sometimes it's called the Office of Professionalism. But please, please file a complaint against this idiot and let them yank his license. And if he isn't a licensed massage therapist, Dan is absolutely right. You've got to file a police report, because if he has done this to you, he's done this to someone else, and he will continue to do this to people in the future. I'm so sorry he did this to you. And Dan, thank you for the advice that you gave her. It is my sincere hope that after you have healed, that you will find another massage therapist that you can put your trust back into.
Hi, Dan. I'm responding to the caller on episode 548 with the girl that had the fuck buddy she was kind of upset with. And I think what's interesting is people in the fuck buddy relationship are basically in a non-monogamous relationship, but without really the tools to be able to manage that. So in the swinger world, it's really common for, you know, people to, you know, be around other people that they either have fucked or want to fuck, but are, you know, handsy with somebody else. So I think the key here is that you just got to be able to communicate, right? And it's not too difficult to just, you know, communicate, hey, I want to fuck this person tonight, but I know I'm going to see you again in the future, so let's hook up again another time. I mean, that should be a fairly easy thing to understand, but the guy needed to communicate better. So it's just, you got a couple of young kids that just don't know how to communicate these things, but maybe they just talk it out. They'll be able to patch things up.
Hey, Dan and the Tech Savvy At-Risk Youth. This is a comment for the guy who has the girlfriend who wants him to follow methods to reduce his drive until she figures out hers. That's me 20 years later. Great kids and everything for, you know, making that the price of admission to stick around. I'm on antidepressants, which are known to decrease libido, and working out 90 minutes a day to completely exhaust myself. Cut all those things. I'm here from the future. Don't keep doing this. Find somebody you're compatible with.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Love Cast. If you want to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. Go to itmfa.org or impeachthemotherfuckeralready.com and get some ITMFA t-shirts, hats, buttons, tasteful lapel pins, and we will send all the proceeds, every single cent, to the ACLU, Planned Parenthood, and the International Refugee Assistance Project. ITMFA wear, it's really fun. People will see your ITMFA t-shirt, ask you what that means, and you get to say, it means impeach the motherfucker. Already, I live for those moments. I wear the t-shirts all the time. I have a lot of those moments at the grade, especially on airplanes. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. Follow Rachel Bloom on Twitter at RachelDoesStuff. Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech savvy at Risk Youth and Nancy. We will all be back at you next week with another installment of Savage Lovecast.